Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Criticism.
I just had to call in to respond to this week's installment of Never Trump Drivel from Terry Mattingly.
Compliments.
I love the interviews and insights because they help me battle the slings and arrows of outrageous theology in practice.
Clarification.
Is there a point where, without baptism, infants go to heaven, and after which time they go to hell if they're not baptized?
The Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382.
The other point is how misleading this is to Catholics. She and other Catholic politicians, and now even our president, are giving the impression that it's acceptable to be a Catholic and favor abortion. But that's not. Catholics don't favor what's evil. And it's hard to imagine anything more evil than dismembering babies in their mother's womb. We have to admit the raw evil that abortion is.
That is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco speaking on Fox and Friends about U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and some comments she had made about pro-life voters. Now, I saw the story there on Fox and Friends, but the only other places that are really carrying this story, this really should be a national news story, were kind of the alternative media and, of course, Roman Catholic media. Why is that? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 3rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about media coverage of the Archbishop of San Francisco's statement about U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her views on abortion and being Roman Catholic with Terry Mattingly. Then Rebecca Curtis joins us. We'll talk about the Women's Bible. It is the product of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and the first wave of feminism. You might learn something about that first wave of feminism that you've never learned before. Then we'll spend some time with Kenneth Craycraft. He's the James J. Garner Family Chair of Moral Theology at Mount St. Mary Seminary and School of Theology in Cincinnati, Ohio. We'll talk about the Equality Act and the Do No Harm Act. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the Archbishop of San Francisco's statement about U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Terry Mattingly. He's Senior Fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So I've seen it in alternative media. There was a little bit on Fox and Friends. They talked with the Archbishop of San Francisco for about 5 minutes. And maybe where else? Oh, Roman Catholic media. Why isn't this a national story?
That is a really good question. And I have to admit that in a development that's so typical of this age we live in right now with the news media, I didn't see that on Fox because there's basically only one show on Fox I regularly watch, which is the 6 p.m. evening news with Brett Baer. And I probably see that 2 or 3 times a week. So I didn't see that Fox report. I didn't know about this story until I was researching the inauguration day standoff, which you and I talked about 2 weeks ago, between the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference and the Vatican over kind of whether or not to gently read the Riot Act to now President Joseph Biden, literally on the day of his inauguration. And in the midst of that, I bumped into a discussion of this very interesting dialogue sort of thing that's going on between Speaker Pelosi and the man who is technically and canonically, I believe, her bishop, the Archbishop of San Francisco. And this pointed out that she had made this very interesting public statement in which she said, let me just read the statement. I think that Donald Trump is president because of the issue of a woman's right to choose. She said that voters that voted for Trump in 2016, pro-life voters who voted for Trump in 2016, quote, were willing to sell the whole democracy down the river for that one issue, unquote. Now, that's, of course, a reference to this ongoing discussion of the lesser of two evils and, you know, at what point And she acts, of course, as if the only options in this case were to vote for Trump or to, in that case, vote for Hillary Clinton. And this was occurring in a podcast with Hillary Clinton. So it helps to know who the other person in that conversation is. Well, in response to this remarkable statement from Speaker Pelosi, her archbishop, let me read you his statement and then get into the crucial issue of whether or not this is a national level story. The archbishop said Pelosi, quote, speaks in direct contradiction to a fundamental human right that Catholic teaching has consistently championed for 2,000 years, unquote. Now, I ran into this at the instantly essential Catholic website called The Pillar, where you have two canon lawyers who are also journalists who have started doing some just like I think essential reporting on affairs in the Roman Catholic Church. Here's the point. When you read that statement from Archbishop Coeur de Lion, does that sound to you like a formal public admonition of Pelosi on a matter of church teaching?
Well, I don't know what a formal admonition would sound like because I've never seen one, which is kind of a sad state of affairs, but it sounds pretty close. I mean, for an archbishop to make a public statement in itself sounds like an admonition.
Well, and especially once again, this is her archbishop. So the reason that's important is whether or not he is opening the door to a private meeting with Speaker Pelosi to discuss her standing as a Catholic practicing the sacraments. In other words, if he was going under canon law, because canon law states a quote that has come up in the news, of course, because of Joe Biden and in the past, you know, because of others. Canon law provides, and here's the quote, that those obstinately persevering in manifest grave sin are not to be admitted to Holy Communion. And meanwhile, the Catechism teaches that abortion is the voluntary taking of an innocent human life, the grave immorality of which is teaching which Catholics are required to believe in the divine and Catholic faith, et cetera, et cetera. This gets you into some technical language here. But my point is, it's the exact same issue that we've been discussing with John Kerry years ago as a candidate for the White House, and now with the President of the United States. And years ago, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which just happened to be led by a man named Cardinal Ratzinger, who becomes Pope Benedict XVI, their instructions to the U.S. bishops was that their pastor should meet with them, instructing them about the church's teaching, informing them that they are not to present themselves for Holy Communion until they bring an end to the objective situation of sin, and warning them that they will otherwise be denied the Eucharist. So you have some sort of public admonition, and then you have the archbishop is supposed to meet with, the appropriate word here is penitent, is supposed to meet with this person and inform them that they are in grave danger of being denied the Eucharist and give them a chance to them in private, it would assume, to straighten this out. So the fact that this is happening with the Speaker of the House of Representatives at the same time that you have tensions between the President of the United States, backed by a very, sort of backed by a small number of cardinals and other bishops who are having a standoff with a larger body of bishops, some people say as much as 80% of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference. Both of these are huge stories. My question is, why aren't we hearing about the Nancy Pelosi story? Because if the Archbishop of San Francisco were to act on this, it would set a direct precedent for how the Bishop of Delaware should or shouldn't be acting in relation to Joseph Biden. So once again, your question, why isn't this a national story, is a really, really good question. And it gets us into a discussion of kind of the status of our media and our press right now. Because to be blunt about it, the implication here is that this is a Fox News story. And it is a Catholic specialty media story. But somehow it doesn't meet the requirements to be a mainstream national news story in the mainstream press, in which people on both sides of this debate are interviewed, their concerns are made known, the appropriate canon laws and catechism phrases are read, and the public has a chance to understand them, and people get to debate what they mean. Why isn't this a perfectly normal mainstream news story? And that's the question.
I recently interviewed George Weigel of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and he had written about what he calls an inflection point for American Catholics with the election of President Joseph Biden. And his argument is basically Biden is trying to walk this tightrope of portraying himself as a devout Catholic, but flying in the face of almost all the moral teaching on family, life, marriage, human sexuality, with real policies that he's putting into.
Yeah.
And with every stroke of the executive order pen, he is pressing the issue with the bishops and with American Catholics. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think, didn't we have an encounter the other day in a press conference where a reporter asked about the executive order linked to the Mexico City policy and whether U.S. government money could be spent to advocate for abortion rights in other parts of the world? And the press secretary, I mean, with no need to circle back at all, she immediately just said, "Do I need to remind you that the president is a devout practicing Roman Catholic?" and went to the next question. As if that response answered the policy question and the moral implications attached to it of the Mexico City policy, executive order. So I think Weigel is right when he says that this is going to get continued to be pressed forward and forward and forward. But what it does for me in terms of discussing the journalism issues here, and I wrote about this in a post marking the 17th birthday of Get Religion. I recently wrote about the Biden situation and had a long, quite detailed discussion with a media professional on Facebook, in which this media pro, not a journalist, but a media relations pro, basically argued that American Catholics are Joe Biden Catholics, and that there is no need to cover both sides of the story because they don't believe there are two sides of the story. There is no other side to write about or to treat fairly or to quote accurately because there's only one side of the story, because American Catholics are now Joe Biden Catholics. Now, this is amazing to me in the sense that I'm constantly amazed at the topics that American Catholics can argue about. They will argue about all kinds of things. I saw an amazing piece the other day in which the socio-political implications of the Catholic hymn On Eagle's Wings was being debated, and basically argued that traditional Catholics who prefer Gregorian chant and other hymns to On Eagle's Wings are essentially denying the Francis papacy and the Catholicity of Joe Biden. Just that one hymn, which of course Biden quoted in public remarks. You can argue about whether or not you're supposed to receive communion while kneeling versus standing, in the hand, on the tongue. You can argue about whether it's better for nuns to be in habits than in polyester pantsuits. You can go on and on. the theological implications of architecture, Catholic Twitter in particular, Catholic social media on Facebook. It's amazing how divided American Catholics are right now on all kinds of issues. And to say that they're divided on Joe Biden's history of his changing, moving always to the left, his changing views on abortion, or Nancy Pelosi's, to say that they're not divided on that, that all American Catholics are Joe Biden Catholics, is an amazing statement, but it's a statement that would lead you to say, why do we need to cover this Pelosi story? This is just the same thing as Joe Biden, and we all know that's really not an issue, because the Archbishop of Washington, D.C. has said he'll continue to give him communion, and the Pope said nice things to him the other day and didn't even hint at a conflict, or did maybe a tiny little hint with his reference to the voiceless, that, you know, that Biden should care about the those without a voice. You know, but haven't we settled this already? Joe Biden's fine. He carries a rosary. He's a devout Catholic. That settles the Mexico City issue. And it implies that this showdown between Pelosi and her archbishop isn't really a story. And that's a fascinating statement about where we are or where we might be right now in journalism in American life.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly, media coverage of the Archbishop of San Francisco statement about U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. When we come back, he mentioned Francis. What if Pope Francis, well, President Biden has to wake up every morning wondering whether or not the Pope might say something pro-life and start this fire again with him. We'll talk about that next. How can Christians engage the culture on topics like science, politics, depression, sexuality, personhood, and more? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith That Engages the Culture. It's written by regular guest Dr. Alfonso Espinosa. Faith That Engages the Culture is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Faith That Engages the Culture.
Sent to serve. Across the nation, children are back in 1900 Lutheran schools serving students in early childhood through high school. Whether in person or through remote learning, students are thriving in programs of excellence in safe, caring Christian environments taught by dedicated teachers. To find a school in your community, visit lcms.org/schools. That's lcms.org/schools.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th, at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit sidadvocatesforlife.com. sidadvocatesforlife.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the Archbishop of San Francisco's statement about U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Our guest is Terry Mattingly of Get Religion. 15 years ago, the Lutheran Early Response Team program was born. Teams have traveled across the country to respond to hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, fires, and earthquakes. An estimated 20,000 volunteers have gone through alert training. The Lutheran Early Response Team is a program of LCMS Disaster Response. Learn more about their vital work at lcms.org/disaster, helping the hurting amid disaster. LCMS Disaster Response, lcms.org/disaster. So, Terry, I'm wondering, does President Biden have to worry about waking up one morning to find out that Pope Francis has issued an overtly pro-life statement? Does he have to worry? Not because the Pope wouldn't necessarily issue such a statement, but maybe the press just wouldn't cover it.
That is a really great question. I don't think he has to worry much. I mean, this Pope has already made very strong statements on abortion. I mean, he's talked about abortion being a sign of the materialistic throwaway culture that comes, quite frankly, with kind of rampant capitalism. He's talked about, you know, that you don't get rid of a person by hiring a sniper, and that's basically the same thing as abortion. He has said in one memorable quote that using abortion to rid the world of people whose genetic properties you think are less than worthy of life, he said that's just exactly what the Nazis did, only we're doing it today with white gloves. Now, those are pretty blunt statements, but I think it's very important for listeners to realize here that we are not talking about whether or not the Pope has the ability to control the President of the United States. That takes us back to the famous statement when the first Catholic president was elected, or was in the running to be elected, John F. Kennedy. And Kennedy, of course, gave that famous speech to a ministerial association in Houston in which he pledged that the Vatican would not control his actions as president, and if there was some sort of conflict, he would err on the side of doing the will of the people, or words to that effect. Now, that has kind of been public gospel in American Catholicism ever since. But what we're talking about here, the current conflict is not really about whether the Pope gets to tell the President of the United States what to do. The real story here, and this would become a big issue if the Archbishop of San Francisco acts, what this is really about, the heart of this story, is about a division among Catholic bishops on how to handle public repeated displays of opposition to church teaching by very public Catholics. And when these men became bishops, they took an oath to defend the teachings of the Catholic Church. So the real issue here, and the real sensitive issue, is what will the Pope do if an open public dispute breaks out between one or more bishops in the American Church over the issue of how do we handle this process of public admonition, private meetings with the person, warning them about what they're saying, and then do you deny them the sacraments of the church? Under the belief that giving them the sacraments when they are unrepentant in their sin is a direct threat to their eternal soul. And that's Catholic doctrine, and that's in Catholic law. So what makes the Pelosi story so interesting, and why I think it is a new story, is the potential conflict that it could create between that archbishop and, say, the bishop of Delaware. And caught in between is the newly minted cardinal archbishop of Washington, D.C., who has already stated that he will not deny communion to the president, just as Biden was not denied communion in Washington, D.C. when he was vice president. And hovering over all of this, as I think we've discussed in the past, is that conflict about John Kerry long ago, when the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and Cardinal, then Cardinal Ratzinger, before he became Pope Benedict, set up this idea that you're supposed to meet with these people and tell them what's up, what's wrong with what they're doing, and give them a chance to repent privately. The Archbishop of Washington at that time didn't make public what Ratzinger actually said, and hinted that Ratzinger had called for some sort of compromise here, kind of a leave it up to the local bishop and everybody keep this quiet. And this cardinal went on to say, after all, we would not want to, and I believe the direct quote is, weaponize the Eucharist, unquote. Now, that quote continues to be used today, yet the press doesn't seem to be anxious to note who it was that offered that interpretation and what appears to be a false interpretation of then Cardinal Ratzinger's intent. The cardinal archbishop who said those words and injected that into the debate was one Theodore McCarrick, at that time the cardinal archbishop of Washington. And McCarrick, of course, now is an ex-cardinal, disgraced after accusations of sexual abuse of teenage boys and then a kind of weird stalking of seminarians. And so I don't think a lot of people are wanting to say, hey, we already know what our policy is on this. As the wise Cardinal McCarrick said, that's not a phrase that's really going to go over big right now, but that is, in fact, the line in the dust, the line in the sand that's been drawn. And Catholic bishops are on both sides of that line are daring each other to cross it. And thus, the Nancy Pelosi story is a big story. It would be a big story even if there wasn't a Catholic in the White House. But the fact that you have a liberal Catholic in the White House only makes it an even bigger story. So why isn't it a big story?
How about this for an angle? To kind of pick up on the McCarrick connection, obviously he no longer exercises kind of influence that he did when he was the preeminent bishop in D.C. That's a big deal. How about a journalist just asking the simple question, who now bears the mantle of Theodore McCarrick? Who is the leading, I know they're going to use the term moderate, but I would say liberal voice in the Roman Catholic Church in America?
Well, because of his role in this controversy, that would clearly be Cardinal Supich of Chicago. And he is a man through various alliances and friendships and whatever, is someone who's always been closely identified with McCarrick. And to some degree, you'd have to say that Cardinal Tobin of Newark, McCarrick's old throne before going to Washington, would also fit in that to some degree. And there was this very intriguing private meeting, I believe it was last week, between the Cardinal of Chicago and Pope Francis. And there was no announcement about why they suddenly met and what they discussed and what was the importance of that meeting. Cynics have said that the Cardinal of Chicago wanted this meeting with the Pope so that he could come back to America, even though he's in a minority among the U.S. bishops on how to handle the situation, he can come back and kind of imply, oh, I met with the Pope. Big pause. And the implication is that unless the Pope says something otherwise, I have the Pope Francis Trump card now in my hand. All of this is very political and very complicated. But as a journalism issue, I don't think there's any question that what's going on in San Francisco and the statement and how that relates to Nancy Pelosi, I don't think there's any question that this is a news story. And to say it's not a news story means you have to say that the Biden issue is settled, despite what clearly is a majority in the U.S. Bishops' Conference stating that it hasn't been settled. Meanwhile, you have the Cardinal of Chicago saying that it's time to have discussions about whether there needs to be efforts to reform the leadership of the U.S. Catholic bishops, which sounds like kind of a threat to Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles. Los Angeles is the largest archdiocese in America, a privileged title that used to belong to Chicago, but Chicago's in decline. Los Angeles is rising in part because of growing numbers of Hispanics. And then here you have Archbishop Gomez as the conservative, who is the president of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference. He is, of course, Hispanic, and he's the leader of the largest diocese in the country. Yet, why doesn't Gomez have a cardinal's hat? Why does the tiny, fading little diocese in Newark, why does the person sitting in that throne have a cardinal's hat and the Hispanic leader of Los Angeles does not have a cardinal's hat? That's another issue that's kind of over this. Is Supich basically sort of threatening Gomez here, saying, you know, I've gone to talk to the Pope. Is it time for maybe your type to be phased out as leader of the U.S. Bishops Conference?
Does he want to pick a fight? Does Supich want to pick a fight with Gomez, which would only draw the attention of the press as to that inflection point in Roman Catholicism? Because the other thing Weigel had to say is it's time to drop the veneer of what he called episcopal unity in the College or even in the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Oh, yeah. Except once again, for the press to notice this and to cover it brings us back to the issue of you have to admit it's real. You have to admit the divisions there. You have to admit what the division's about. And then it raises the issue of, are you obligated by some sort of journalism history or press model? Are you supposed to treat both sides of that debate accurately and fairly after all these years of kind of ignoring what McCarrick did with the creation of what conservatives frequently refer to as the McCarrick Doctrine that has created this standoff in the first place? I've been waiting for one of the stories about this Inauguration Day standoff between the Cardinal of Chicago and the Archbishop of Los Angeles. I've been waiting for anybody in the mainstream press to mention McCarrick's role in the history of this conflict, and I haven't seen a single reference to him yet. And that's, to me, very intriguing, because there's no doubt about it. That's where this conflict, this standoff, began. And it ends up being ex-Cardinal Theodore McCarrick versus retired Pope Benedict, which gets us back then to another thing that Catholics argue about, which is the theological differences between Benedict and Francis. And that's another can of worms to open up as a part of all this. But trust me, when Catholics talk about this, and I've heard them argue about it, when they talk about it, that comes up too.
Terry, Get Religion turned 17 yesterday. It was formed with two essential goals. Tell us what they were, and have you seen progress in these goals in the last 17 years?
Well, the two goals we started, one was we have long articulated what we call religion ghosts, that frequently when you're reading stories in the press and you can tell that there's some major factor missing in the coverage, and it's usually facts and history related to religion. And this gets us back to that quote I've used many times from Bill Moyers of CBS in an interview I did with him years and years ago, in which he said, let's face it, the press tends to be tone deaf on the music of religion. They just don't hear it. They don't recognize the religion angles of stories, whether it's demographics and birth rates or whether it's political divisions about what people call the pew gap, you know, in American politics and all these things. So you have the religion ghost angle, which is very clearly articulated in the first thing I wrote for the website all those years ago, back on February the 2nd, 2004. But the second thing that has grown out of that has been a defense of what most people in journalism history would call the American model of the press. And that is this idea that you're supposed to do accurate, balanced, fair-minded coverage of the voices that are involved in heated debates in public life. And it'd be hard to come up with a topic that is more heated in American life still to this day than abortion. First Amendment fights related to other aspects of the sexual revolution would come right behind that. Now, the question that forget religion is to what degree in the internet age can we expect the press to deliver the American model of journalism? And I constantly hear from readers who basically say, I don't think there are two sides to that issue. We already know who's right. We already know who's wrong. We already know what good religion is. We already know what bad religion is. Why would you expect the press to do fair and accurate coverage of bigots? Well, in the internet age, where the business model of journalism has increasingly become connected to mouse clicks and to loyal subscribers who are willing to pay for the news instead of just reading it for free off the internet somewhere or reading what their friends say on Facebook, journalists, editors, publishers now have a profound and powerful rationale for saying we really should give our own readers what they want. We should deliver the news to them in the manner that they want, since that will keep them clicking their mouse and paying for their subscription. And this is taking us back to an older model of the press that some call the European model of the press, in which the press openly advocates for certain positions, people, political parties, etc. And there is no need to do fair and accurate coverage of one side of the debate because you already know who's right. So why cover both sides with a sense of respect for the people on both sides of the debate? Or in this case, why do coverage of conflicts between quote-unquote Joe Biden Catholicism and, okay, Cardinal Corleone Catholicism, or American Catholicism as it's practiced by many in the pews, and Roman Catholic Catechism doctrine and life. If we've already decided who's right, why should Get Religion keep bringing this up? Why should we argue about the American model of the press? Why should we stress that it's important? And that's a question that, quite frankly, looms over the website and its future.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you next week.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Rebecca Curtis will be with us. She's author of a column for Touchstone Magazine titled The First Wave Bible. We'll talk about the Women's Bible by First Wave feminist Elizabeth Cady Stanton. If you appreciate Issues Etc., our 24/7 music and talk stations, and our daily verse-by-verse Bible study, The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For nearly 140 years, the Lutheran Witness has taught the faith, defended it against error, and shown forth the great treasures of the Lutheran Church and biblical doctrine. We're continuing this legacy by publishing issues and articles that help you see the world from a Lutheran perspective and that teach biblical doctrine and show forth the treasures of God's Word. Visit our website to learn more and how to subscribe, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.